Hey everyone, this is Jake Pentland of the Jake Pentland Show. I will not be doing a live show today. However, stay tuned if you missed it to listen to my interview with the wonderful Sandra Bernhardt. This show was featured on Blog Talk Radio's main page. This is a big moment for my podcasting career. I might even move up to 40 listeners after today. So please stay tuned. I'll see you next week. Thanks.
Hello and welcome to the latest installment of the Jake Pentland Show. I am excited, as always, but particularly excited today because I will be joined later, she is not called in just yet, by the great Sandra Bernhardt. So we're excited. This is a big coup for us. I normally don't get starstruck, obviously, but I do find myself a little bit nervous today and slightly intimidated, although I think I've been offending Sandra on Twitter, like many people, for a long time, but Twitter is a different animal. Very, very cool that she's going to call in. But with that said, say hello, Jen.
Hello. I'm more nervous than you are.
Yeah, it's funny. It's so, like, you know. Oh, and Eli, sorry. Eli, say hello, of course.
Hey, Coach.
I almost knew Eli. He was getting his Tourette's stuff out before the show, and I hope he didn't. I hope nobody heard.
I hope it's out.
Yeah, good old Eli. I won't go into what was said, but I do love Eli. Eli dearly. And since we don't have Sandra, I guess we'll just sort of chill for a little bit. No need to go right into it. But I just want to say, before we start, happy birthday to my best friend in the world. It was yesterday, Eli.
Oh, thanks,
happy
man. That's
birthday,
very kind of
Eli.
Yeah, thank you. I share it with a comedian we're obsessed with, Jake. What's her name? From 30 Rock?
Tina Fey?
Yeah, she has the same birthday as I do.
Wow, it's impressive.
I feel really good about myself when I say that.
Obviously, astrology does not work because she's successful.
Yeah,
but you had fun.
No,
you went and saw The Dictator last night. Was it fun?
Yeah, it was fun. A lot of forced humor. But I was sitting in the audience with a bunch of people from the Middle East. So it was kind of interesting to see their reaction to the jokes that were conveyed and displayed. And I thought it was funny. I think he's hilarious.
I do too.
He always makes me laugh, but a lot of it was really forced, but all in all, it was a good movie, and I would recommend it to other people to see it.
Well, that's good to know, and you're not upset at me for ditching you on your birthday, are you?
No, not at all.
Okay. Yeah, I blew you off on his birthday, Jen.
It's not a big deal to me. Yeah. My feelings aren't bad.
You guys don't care about that stuff, right?
Sometimes.
No, I don't really. I got tired when it came close to the time where I was supposed to go out. I was like half awake. So I was like, the less people, the less attention, the better it is for me. Just because, you know, I don't like to be the center of attention.
God, then I should have gone. I could have made it horrible for you. I do see Jeff's going in. I do see a 212 caller. I believe Santa's calling from New York. I don't want to make her hold. This is a big deal. This is a big guest. I mean, we thought Stuart Chavitz, the autistic dad who wired his son, was a big coup, but Sandra's a whole different level, so I don't want to leave her on hold. But anyway, happy birthday, Eli.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And we are going to hang out, just so that people know, I am having dinner with his family tomorrow night. That's the official birthday. That's when he gets his present. I'm really excited about your present.
Me too. And are you gonna show it to me? Show it to everyone in front of everyone? Okay.
Yeah,
good.
It's nothing to be ashamed of. You're gonna like it. If anything, your wife's gonna hate me. That's all I know.
Okay.
Oh,
porn.
It is Sandra. So, you know, enough chit chat, people. Let's get to it. Sandra, are you there?
I'm here.
I am so pleased that you called into the show, let me just say. From the start.
Thank you.
I hate to
I'm delighted to be here.
Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. It's a gorgeous day in New York, and, you know, it's just mellow and just hanging around looking at all of the tweets coming in about the show today.
It's exciting, yeah.
Very excited. All ginned up.
I didn't realize, I have a confession, I had assumed I was following you this whole time because I see your tweets. So I went to send you a private message today, and I realized I don't follow you on Twitter.
Well, that is shocking.
Isn't that?
Isn't
and
that
you have
horrible?
Followed me.
I'm
going to
hang up right now.
I know.
I'm deeply devastated.
Yeah, because my follow is a big deal on Twitter, let me tell you. I bring the Twitter thunder.
But now you will, and now you'll see all the, you know, the brilliance spewing forward.
Well, that's what I've actually been doing this morning, is going back and refreshing myself with your genius.
I love you've been refreshing yourself, like just taking some of my genius into the shower and, like, scrubbing it.
No, it'll be the first time.
I've always been a fan, but I just watched the clip. I bounce around. I apologize. I'm just excited. But
We all do. Don't worry, honey.
Okay,
you know that. That's
perfect.
How we are.
Of the Jodie Foster Director Academy. And I almost peed my pants laughing. I don't know what year that's from.
What was it?
You were... The clip title is Comedy is So Self-Indulgent. And you were saying you were done with acting and comedy and getting into directing. And then you went to the Jodie Foster School of Directing, where you learned to break down a camera and set up lights. It was hysterical.
What is that? You know, sometimes I amaze myself because people will say, what about that? And I don't even remember saying anything like that because sometimes when I'm on stage, I kind of go off on these tangents, and they're like one-offs, and I never say it again. And then people will say, hey, what about like this? And I'm like, the Jodie Foster School of Directing, that's very funny. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that was me. Good to know once in a while I even like delight myself.
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, we'll get right into it. I mean, you obviously prepare stand-up. I mean, you don't just go up there and do straight one-offs.
No, of course, of course. Yes, yes, I do. I always have like... a whole set that I can fall back on. But then often in the middle of it, depending on what's going on and how the audience is, you've been around it long enough, if there's a great crowd and you're really connecting and you feel free to talk about anything, you'll just go off, and then you go off book. But you always have a place to come back to. So that's, it's a safety net.
I guess. I mean, I fancy myself that I do that way, but the truth is I completely suck at this. I'll have a safety net, and then I'll think, I'm just going to go off here for a sentence or two, and then I find I've been talking for like a half hour straight, and then I'm getting all these notes to shut up from all the other people on the show. How do you? I mean, is that just a craft that you've worked out just by being on stage so much, or is it just something innate, knowing when to shut up? I guess I'm saying.
I think it's a combination, and I also think you sometimes I'll go off on these really intense, funny, stream of consciousness, free form things, and then, when I'm kind of, I feel myself winding down. You know what I mean? Like I've kind of played it out, and then I'll just kind of go back to it again. And you kind of tire yourself out too. It's like a dog chasing its tail. The dog will just lay down again. So it's all that. It's really a combination, but it's keeping your ear to the ground and hearing the drum beat.
What happens on those times, because this is more my experience, on the times where, even if it's prepared or not prepared, when it's just not working? Do you get that horrible feeling like you just want to jump out the window, or do you work through it? I mean, how do you deal with, I guess, basically bombing? I don't know if it's ever happened to you. I assume it happened to everybody.
It happened a lot more back in the day when I was starting out and doing strictly comedy. But, now that I... usually have a band with me and I sing. It's nice because I can fall back on a song and kind of go out of the moment. But it doesn't happen often. If I'll try a new market, like a smaller market somewhere where people are like not completely hip to what I do, and they're kind of just, I don't even think it's necessarily that they're not enjoying it. They just don't get the rhythm, or they've never seen me live. It's a little harder work. I have to kind of pull it out of them. But it's good because it keeps you on your toes, and you never get complacent that way.
And you've—I mean, like you said, you mentioned you sing. Of course, everyone knows that you act and comedy and all these things. What is it? Do you enjoy them all equally, or do you have a preference? If you only pick one, basically, which would you do?
Well, I'd have to say that if I only had my choice of one, it would definitely be performing live.
Right.
Because it's just—and there's nothing else like it. And you can be on a movie set or on, filming a four-camera, series and all the rest of it. But there's so much stop and start in that, and there's, like, no immediate feedback or response from an audience. So just in terms of sheer adrenaline and excitement, I think live performing is definitely on the top of the list.
And did you always know, I talked to my mother about this, of course, and she always knew. I mean, she always knew
the
time she was three. You always knew, right?
Yeah, my first conscious, memory of it was when I was five, actually talking to a family friend, and she asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. I said a comedian, and she laughed and thought it was so adorable. But I did know, and And that was, I just came in knowing it, you know. And I have three older brothers, and, you know, they were like a captive audience. So I was always singing and doing my little routines, and, you know, they just thought I was just dropped from, you know, from a spaceship or something, because I was just so different than everybody else.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that I don't want to get too in depth. I know you're here to promote a show and all, but I'm fascinated by you. Right? I have this theory, again, growing up a child of a comedian, and this, again, is no insult to my mother, but I find that people, myself included, that have that sort of always knowing, always wanting to be a comedian, I've always sort of questioned, is that honestly innate, or do you think that's something that happened early on, some environmental thing, maybe you just noticed something? I mean, a lot of times comics are screwed up people. I mean, we all know that. I'm not saying
right.
all of them. But,
right.
I mean, how much of it do you really think, like, you really were dropped from another planet, and it's innate, and that's just your personality, and how much was just your upbringing? I'm not familiar with your upbringing, but you know the question.
You know, I don't think it was my upbringing. I think that, you know, a lot of people in my family were writers, especially on my mom's side. You know, like probably half the people in my family write. A lot of my family are out in L.A. writing on TV shows and cousins. And so I think it's kind of in my DNA. And my grandmother, who came over from Russia when she was young, she was really a frustrated performer, so I think that was part of it. There were a lot of big personalities in my family. You know, all both my grandmothers had big personalities, and my mother was a painter and an abstract artist. She's not doing it anymore, but so, you know, there was a lot of influence artistically from every angle in growing up in my life. So I think that, you know, that kind of in my DNA, I was surrounded by it, and I think that it's just second nature for me.
I think that's, I mean, I don't know how much you follow me on Twitter or not, or
I do, I follow you a lot.
Okay, so I talk a lot now about what I call, you know, I don't know what I call it anymore. Actually, I've changed it so many times. I call it the gentrification. I call it the narcissist movement, but there are a lot of kids being raised now where, you know, they're basically told this, like, that thing you had, or my mother had, that performance thing, that was kind of rare back in that
mm-hmm.
day, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And now, it's rare to find a kid that doesn't want to be famous or perform.
That's right.
And
the problem, here's the problem. They want to be famous. They don't want to do the work, and they really don't have anything to say, and there's no sort of a strong pulse.
Exactly.
In their arm that's pushing them into it. Like I couldn't have done, and your mom and I couldn't have done anything else. And we paid, you know, tremendous price along the way for doing it. You know, being women in the early years I know this is probably like pushing it, but you know, a male dominated world, and you know, it wasn't easy. But it just isn't easy to get up and do stand up, no matter who you are,
right.
A man or a woman. So I think now kids don't understand the amount of passion and dedication it takes to do anything from, you know, from designing clothes to performing to writing songs to directing a movie. Whatever artistic leaning you have, you can't just, like, pick up a digital camera and make a movie and that's just post it and that's the work. I mean, no, it isn't the work, because it's a combination of living your life, throwing yourself in the deep end of, you know, the emotional pool, and really, like, hunkering down and, like, you know, I got up every night like your mom did and performed at some shitty little club, you know, whether it was, you know, Rusty's Bagel on La Brea with 10 people in the audience, or whether I went on at 1 o'clock in the morning at the Comedy Store in Westwood and, you know, sat around for 2 hours waiting to get on at the Improv. You know, you just did it, and that's what you did. And then I got up and I had a day job, and you know what? It was like, that's how you got to do it when you're 18, 20, 25. And if it's meant to be, it'll happen.
And it's fair to say, I mean, that's basically what you're saying, but that fight, that work, that ethic, whatever you want to call it, that drive, the struggle and all that kind of stuff, that itself, that whatever that comes from, wherever that comes from, that's essential. I mean, there's an old saying, you win from within, so.
Right.
The problem
That's
with kids,
right.
You said it best. They don't. They're told you're going to be a star, and you don't have to do anything. And I guess my question. I know you have a daughter. You have one daughter.
Yeah, one.
Just one kid. Does she have any desire to perform?
She's a real artistic person.
Mm-hmm.
But she, no. She's funny because she auditioned for LaGuardia High School, which is, you know, the performing arts high school. And she went and she did some songs and came out and she said, it went all right. She said, but I don't want to go here.
Right.
So my answer is no. I don't think she wants to do that. But I think she will be some sort of an artist behind the scenes.
And you obviously instill in her the same work ethic you have.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think right now I'm just instilling in her the joy of being 13, soon to be 14, and like, you know, throwing herself into every available opportunity at school, you know. And we're in New York City. She can walk to, you know, art galleries and museums, and, you know, everything is at our fingertips. So it's so easy for a kid in New York to be exposed to all kinds of amazing experiences. And I think it's just great to be a kid and enjoying that.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, do you fear the future as much as I do? I mean, when you look at the other kids we were talking about a few minutes ago, when we're talking about a whole generation that doesn't understand the need to work or craft, I mean, it's terrifying to me. I mean, that's why I get in trouble a lot and I start fights a lot, usually with mothers or parents, because, you know, people are very protective and defensive about how they raise their kids, which is totally understandable. But if they're doing something that's detrimental to the kids, ultimately, as I look at it, they're doing something detrimental to the future of this country, which is going to affect me.
Well, I'm very hardcore because, you know, my girlfriend and I, who are raising my daughter together, you know, we didn't let her have a phone until this year. She didn't have a phone. She didn't have a computer. She also goes to a Waldorf school, with Waldorf Education, which is, we won't get too sidetracked, but it's really kind of a no media policy. It's all the kids learn to do things, you know, from knitting to crocheting to woodworking and metalwork. So boys and girls, they all have to play an instrument. She's played cello for 5 years. So where she goes to school, there's no kind of outlet for that instantaneous, you know, success and over-the-top attitude. The kids all have to do things that are very, you know, technical with their hands, and they learn how to do things that are creative and craft-oriented, and so it keeps their mind in a different kind of place.
God,
I purposely, you know, they get exposed to, they go up to this organic farm upstate New York, and they work on the farm for a week every year, and I wanted her to have that experience so she wasn't exposed to all these kind of bratty kids who just, like, you know, watch. She does watch Glee, but it's funny. We watch Glee together, and she totally gets it and kind of laughs at it and, like, says, well, that's ridiculous, you know. That would never happen, and that couldn't happen. So it's kind of a funny, fun balance in our house of, like, looking at the reality of what it takes and also laughing at the sort of stupid ethos that people have these days, you know.
It's fascinating. And I mean, this is not Sandra, the performer or comic. I think you're brilliant, and I just want to ask you your opinion as an intelligent person. What happened? Why do you think it changed? I was talking to my stepfather. He's an old goat. He's a libertarian now. He's an ex-hippie. He used to do a bunch of acid and pot, and he was totally left-winger and all this stuff. And we were talking. He's like, God, he's in the 60s. And I was asking him his theory of what changed, because it's not just you and I that are noticing this change. I mean, it's around the country. People are starting to see it. What happened?
I think a lot of things. I think that people got really lazy. I think that politically things shifted. And I think that, of course, you know, the Internet and the immediacy of people being able to expose, quote-unquote, their brilliance,
right.
And, you know, and a sort of cynical, you know, attitude that so many people have, and it's very easy to be smug and cynical and jaded, and I think that's a real danger in this country. And I think there's just too many frigging people.
I mean, it could be. I posed a theory, you know, I'm 33, so I wasn't around. I mean, it's all just based off, you know, what I have access to. But I see it, you know, I did a show not too long ago about how, whether it was the baby boomers or the progressives, I've mentioned the feminist movement, I've gotten on a lot of fights over that. But my theory is that, you know, your parents' generation or even your generation saw maybe America is sort of this cold, hard, you know, work to the bone. You don't really get anything out of it. You have this dead-end job. And I feel, and I'm, basically this is a question to you, did it, you know, you're a performer, and my mother is too, did it, was it born out of that, that you wanted maybe a life that was more creative and artistic, and you didn't want to slave your life away? I mean, I know your father's a doctor, yes, a proctologist?
Yeah,
and your
yeah.
mom's an artist, so maybe you didn't grow up in that, but...
I didn't grow up in that, you know, and that's really not, that was not my inspiration to becoming a performer. I just, I don't know, I loved being, I grew up, like, actually influenced by, you know, some of the TV shows, the early TV shows of Mary Tyler Moore and, you know, the some of the old comedy shows and seeing how much fun people had, too, you know, like the Rat Pack in Vegas and the glamour and the excitement and Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli. And I was much more inspired by what you could accomplish as a great entertainer, you know, and the kind of influence you could wield and sophistication. I love the sophisticated idea of being a performer. And that's really what, you know, I knew that it was out there and available. And that's where I kind of still come from. I love beautiful clothes and I like to walk on stage and give them class and, you know, a heel. And, you know, I like glamour. And I think that glamour is missing from the landscape. I think people are very, like, sleazy and sex is cheap and, you know, and people, you know, are just, you know, running around in short skirts and high heels and they're dumb as stiff. They don't read. They don't look at good old movies. I think there's just, like, this sort of lack of, you know, sophistication in this country, and I think that's one of the biggest problems.
Well, I guess more specifically, that, I mean, that's essentially what I'm talking about. You think that's because of the internet? I mean,
well, I think it's because of the partially because of the internet, and I think it's partially because people just have gotten very lazy. I think that it's just easy to, like, phone it in. You know, I mean. Listen, there's so much on TV that you know, glorifies, you know, the kind of easy, cheap road to take. I mean, it kind of started with, you know, all the magazines, the, you know, National Enquirer and the Star, and then,
right.
You know, this, you know, Entertainment Tonight, and then it just kind of trickled down from there, and, you know, you sit and watch, you know, the housewives of, you know, every city in the country, and New York to Orange County, and these people are like, they think they're stars. And the next thing you know, Nanny Leakes is like on Glee, and now she's going to be on Ryan Murphy's new show. It's like, yeah, you can. As a matter of fact, you can make it with no talent, and that is the problem.
And that's got to piss you off, obviously. I mean, that's just got to just piss you off.
What?
More than it pisses me off.
It's more than pissing me off. It's just, you know, it's soul crushing because, it's, like I said, what I grew up on was, like, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. and Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Johnny Carson and, you know, all these people who had worked their way up based on their talent and had all these great stories and experiences. I mean, you watch Johnny Carson every night. I mean, you know, people would just come on and they'd just shoot the shit, and it was fabulous, you know. And I was like, that's how I want it to be. Like, I want to come on and shoot the shit with Johnny Carson, you know. That's sexy. That's fun. And now everybody's just, like, so greedy, and it's just, like, just grabbing at shit. It's like going to, like, a giveaway and, like, you know, taking everything before anybody even gets there. You know, they have those swag bars when you go to, like, you know, the big, you know, the Oscars and the Golden Globes. You can go and all you have to do is pose with, like, the sunglasses. And they give you a big bag, and you put 20 pairs of sunglasses in a bag, and you walk out. It's, like, it's gross.
I know.
How can you even enjoy something if you just go and take it and you haven't earned it?
I mean, that's a brilliant question. And just go back to your point when you mentioned guys like Sammy Davis or Phyllis Diller or whoever.
Yeah.
These people didn't just do one thing.
No.
They
exactly.
Could do
everything.
They
were entertainers.
Yeah.
And they were smart, and they exposed themselves to great art and travel. And you went around and you saw the world and you took in different cultures, and you went to the theater, and you went to a smoky jazz club, and you listened to Miles Davis play his trumpet, and Nina Simone sitting at the piano. It's like, expose yourself to things, educate yourself. It is all here on the internet. That's the irony. If you go to YouTube, you can see any great performance that you could possibly dream of. But if you don't even know who these people are, if you've never read a book, if you haven't picked up, you know, a historical novel, then you're not going to know what the hell's even available to you. And you're going to get stuck in this loop of total mediocrity and stupidity.
Amen. God, I love talking to you.
Again,
I mean, I don't want to keep hitting this, but I'm just going to pose this theory. I think that is what happened because of parenting. I think there became a shift in parenting whenever, 70s, 80s. I always blame the baby boomers. I'm going to stick with that for now.
Okay.
And I think there was this thing, you know, when you talk about working hard, as a child of a baby boomer, who's someone who worked her ass off, that wasn't necessarily what my generation was told. We weren't told, hey, if you want something, go work on it. You know, what we were told was, you can be anything you dream. And it seems like a small difference. In fact, when I talk about it, most people stare right through me. But those two phrases are so, there's such a gigantic gap between those two phrases.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I, you know what, I don't believe that. I don't believe you can be anything you dream.
Of course not.
Because most people shouldn't be, you know, they shouldn't be performers. They shouldn't be the president. You know, do something in your, you know, within your reach, within your intellectual, you know, ability. And just do it well. And if that means you're, you know, a fireman or a policeman or, you know, listen, some of the people I love the most are my plumbers and electricians.
Yeah.
I always say, like, you know, I had a fabulous plumber in the valley when I had my house there, Gary Bergantino. And then, you know, in the morning of the earthquake in 93, whenever it was, that, you know, he was the first person I called. I said, I didn't call Naomi Campbell, the supermodel, to come over. That's just, I love her, and she's fabulous and glamorous, and I would love to just hang out and be with her. She wasn't going to come and fix my water heater.
Right.
So don't, you know, you don't need to be a superstar. Just do something and do it well. And, you know, we need our you know, people that pick up the wrenches and do the hard work and build the roads and do the things that, you know, keep the country moving. What's wrong with that? What's the shame in that?
I don't know. I mean, it's just this need to be a star or you know, the old saying, greed is good, that I remember coming through the 80s out of the Reagan era, and it just is sort of this thing. It's like, or the saying, it's not personal, it's business. There's a sort of approach that if you can make it to the top, whether it's fame or, you know, financial, however you want to do it, it doesn't matter what you did to get there. As long as you're there, you're in the club. And
yeah.
That sort of became, like, again, if you whatever you dream of can happen, and if you're not told or preached that you've got to build it up or work, then it's really hard to sit there and say that doesn't work when you're talking about the Wives of Beverly Hills on Glee and people getting talk shows that were reality stars. It's really hard to tell your kids, you know, you really got to work hard, because they'll just turn on the TV and go, no, you really don't. Well, then you got to have talent, and then they'll, you know, they'll go put in a, you know, what's his name, Kanye West song. The guy doesn't even sing. He uses a freaking computer to assist his voice, and they'll say, I don't even have to sing anymore.
Well, here's my theory. Don't let your kids watch the fucking TV. If you, all right, I know people are busy working. You know,
as my hair in the back watching.
You can't monitor
right now
every minute of your child's life, but you can do a little better job. I check in on my daughter in her room every hour, and if she's in her on her computer, and I don't see that it, this year that it involves homework, I'll say, honey, turn that fucking thing off. You
How
don't
old
need that
she?
Thing right now. She's almost 14.
Okay.
You know, and sometimes she goes a little, you know, haywire with the TV, and we say, no, honey, you can turn that fucking TV off. We're not watching TV right now. Go to your room and read a book. Go practice your talk. Do something. Go for a walk. Take the dog out. Do something. You're not watching that right now. I mean, if you need to, like, I like I say, if you're trying to buy your child's love by giving them, you know, computers and phones, you know, they're going to wake up one day and they're going to hate you, because the love doesn't, you know, in the moment doesn't mean anything. It's the long term. It's the hardest thing to do is raise a kid and really roll up your sleeves and be there for them and tell them that they can't do something and
right.
Take something away, you know.
I really monitor mine, but unless I do the Jake Pentland show, they're completely unmonitored in my bedroom right now. But
well, that's smart.
That's just 1 hour a week.
Good for you. That's
but
awesome.
They are. They're monitored. They have to earn tickets to watch TV or play a video game. So, but we're very active. We're out there. So good for you too. I grew up with a TV in my room and I didn't come out. But I did watch you because of it. So.
Well, at least back then there was something to watch. There wasn't totally
yeah.
mind numbing.
Oh, my mom raised me on good shit. We watched Newhart, Mary Tyler Moore, all those. At Night was the thing. I had to watch Murder, She Wrote, too, which sucked.
Oh, that's messy. Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, let me ask you one more question.
Yeah, well, I think it got corrupt with Friends, I thought. When they demanded more money per episode or they quit, and I thought, they're not doing it for the art anymore. They don't enjoy it. They just want it for the money.
Oh, it's before that.
Friends was the first one I remember as a kid, at least.
Well,
we'll only keep doing it for this much an episode or we quit.
Yeah, I remember. I had a line that said, I've never watched Friends and I've never done coke. That was the show was on. It seemed like those are the two things that you should be the most proud of at that particular moment.
Well, Sandra, let me ask you a question because I see my sister's on and I just want to ask you one more question because you know Jenny, obviously.
Of course. Do I know Jenny? Yeah,
of course.
We're trying to write together, Jenny.
I'm going to go to her in a second, but I just want to ask, with your daughter, here's one more thing. I just want to cover everything I've been yelled at because you say things in such a more articulate way than I do. I end up getting in trouble and putting my foot in my mouth, and then everyone wants to have an intervention.
I know, but
me.
You know, you're out there every week. It's hard to keep this, you know, the show going and not make a few, you know, logistical errors. So go ahead. Yes.
I said not too long ago about our children that we should bring back a healthy level of shame. I got in a lot of trouble. You know, on air, off air. I know that's a word that's probably not the best one for me to use, but with your daughter, if she brought you, you say she's an artist, if she painted something or did something, I assume it's painting, and let me ask you this. Let me just start.
And it looks like shit.
How do you critique her? Is the question? Yeah.
Well, I think the good thing about her is that she's awesome. Oh, I'll give you a perfect example. Last weekend, she had to do a cello recital at school. And she hadn't been practicing, and I was on her ass. I said, honey, you got to practice. She said, oh, no, I have this totally down. Anyway, so then a piano was introduced into the equation, and she totally threw her off, and she wasn't any good. So I waited till we got home, and my girlfriend and I said, honey, you know, I think had you practiced a little more, it would have been better. Oh, it was fine. You should have seen me. And my teacher said I was great. I said, well, she's wrong. I don't think she should have said that. I think she should have said you should have practiced more. And I don't. And I'm furious because you didn't practice enough. And I don't care if the piano threw you off because you weren't good. It wasn't a good piece. She threw herself in her bedroom. She was stormed out, and we let her storm out. But I wasn't going to, like, pretend that she – because sometimes she is good on the cello. This was the time she wasn't, and she hadn't practiced. So she fought us, and she tried to, like, you know, justify it. But in the end, she was – you know, she knew that we were right.
God bless you. You know, most parents now would say, yes, you're amazing. You should open up for, you know, whoever. You should have your own concert hall. And then these
kids
never
practice.
Yeah,
well, this is where she goes to school, too. Once again, you know, they believe that you have to be honest with your kids and tell them, you know, when they haven't done the work, you know, because it's that's part of, you know, preparing your kids for reality in life, you know. Not everybody's going to say you're wonderful. Matter of fact, you're going to get a lot of criticism as you go through life. And if your parents haven't done it, then you're just going to be defensive constantly and never grow.
I told Eli no sound effects, but this would be a perfect time for an applause because that's sort of the heart of the entire thing. You know, when I said there's a difference in working and dreaming, there's also the shift, which is there's a difference in the thought that parenting is about, it used to be about preparing your kid for when they're 18 on their own. You want to prepare them for the real world. Now it's you want to protect them from it. Seems like a small thing. It's a huge gap as well.
I think that's very important, and I love that you're saying this. I think it's essential now more than ever. I think you have to be a fucking road warrior as a parent. You have to prepare your kid for the apocalypse.
Yeah. Oh, there's the applause. Thank you, Eli. I told Eli, I said, we have the great Sandra Bernhardt, so let's try not to be a wacky morning show. Let's make her think she's on an actual show of substance. So thank you. But anyway, I'm going to go stay on, everybody. I'm going to go to Jenny. Are you there, Jenny?
Yeah, how are you doing?
How are you?
Good.
This is unbelievable. I can't believe 6 hours earlier in Hawaii.
Look at the
And here I am sitting in my apartment in New York. I miss you, Jen. Sarah and I talk about you constantly. I just read her your tweet about the hobo shit.
What was that tweet?
Fucking hilarious.
Sarah, I'll find it for you. I just have to say,
a hobo shit in her tree and threw a shirt, so that's why she's having so many, so she'd have a bunch of kids. But it came out way funnier out of her tweet.
But it was the logical next step.
It was just, you come at it from such a great, you know, imaginative place. I'm always reading tweets to my girlfriend, like all these people who are supposedly so brilliant, and they're just like these stupid things. They're just so stupid and linear. And you just take it to some, like, totally brilliant, you know, liberating, funny place. Anyway, you know we're fans, and we want to write something together, and we always think, oh, I wish Jenny could just come over right now. We could just write for 2 hours.
I know. We need a teleportation machine or something for
time.
Call
the telephone. You guys, we're doing it right now. You guys could do it anytime.
Well,
what's
it's
the phone?
True,
my
if,
phone got shut off.
Oh. Well, Skype.
We could Skype. We could. We have to come up with a new idea, though. I don't like that idea anymore. Anyway, we won't bore anybody because they won't even know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about.
No, I know. That's the beauty of it.
There are endless, endless ideas out there and so many new possibilities that this new world is bringing that it's like you just kind of have to totally fucking relax and try to let the new ideas in. It's pretty hard, though, but...
Are we talking about writing?
That's an opportunity.
Yeah, we're talking about doing, like, we're trying to write a TV pilot. I had come up with this idea, actually, for me and Lisa Lampanelli. It was about the two of us had been comedy partners, and we broke up, and then we come back together. And it is a funny idea. I don't think she loved the approach I took. She likes a joke. I'm not a joke teller or writer. So I brought Jenny
there's
in.
There's a lot of subtext there. I like the subtext, but you guys were talking about earlier. It's kind of weird right now because it seems like TV and entertainment in general are like in some kind of weird flux where it's trying to figure out how to. But I think people have to kind of miss that there's subtext. They have to miss there's no subtext anymore and be sad about it before like something deep and good happens again. It's like the pendulum is swinging to the total wiener joke side and it has to go back at some point to character driven. And I just hope that happens soon because I have not had TV for like 8 years. I hate everything that I've seen. There's nothing that I like.
Not even Jersey Shore?
I've never seen Jersey Shore. I've never seen Housewives. I've never seen any of those shows. It's been 8 years without TV or 7 years, so.
You're missing some good stuff,
so
Jenny. Missing good stuff.
To be able to be in Hawaii and, like, go work with your bees and, like, pollinating the macadamia trees and the organic thing and, like, there's stuff to do in Hawaii. I mean, there's like
if I was in Hawaii, I wouldn't watch TV either.
You can occupy a lot of your time, you know, doing a lot of great things on that island. And I tell you, it's really a great thing.
It's true.
So,
I do love it. My kids are outside feeding the sheep right now, so I can call in. So, there's a lot of stuff I love about it. But it's also, you know, I had to give up everything that I ever believed in and that I had to get here. So, I mean, that is kind of like recreating my own reality and my entire life from the ground up, which I think goes hand in hand with what you guys were talking about with the parenting. Like, I lived in Manhattan Beach in the nicest area with the nicest schools, and I just remember it was so vapid and empty, and, you know, everybody was bragging about their cars and their scores and how good their kids were at this and that, and there was an award ceremony every other day for some BS that,
Jesus,
you know, no child should
be celebrating. Stop celebrating the kids. It's so true. It's like, constant
the only
celebration of these fucking kids. It's like,
true.
Just shut up. Grow up.
There's
get back to me in 20 years.
There was a graduation for preschool, and they had a ceremony, and I was like, fuck this, I'm moving. Let's get out of here.
That is time to go. Oh, God. Oh,
that's
man. Well,
insane.
We have a barbecue for preschool.
Are they homeschooled, Jenny, still?
No, I only did that for 1 year, and it was out of necessity for that year. It wasn't like, you know, some big religious kick I went on or anything like that. So it was extra hard because I didn't have a community. The only homeschooling community was, you know, really, really like hippie-ish people and really religious people.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of people with learning disabilities and stuff. But, I mean, it wasn't ideal. It was only from necessity, and it was only for a year. So this year they're in a private school right now, and I think they're going to go to the same school next year too. But the school
they seem to be flourishing. The kids, they're so darn cute. Obviously, you see them sometimes, don't you, Jake? Your nephew.
I was out there for the reality show, but you know,
right,
I was talking
to
my sister Brandy last night, who lives in Colorado, and we were having this deep talk about how we don't see each other much. And I was like, you know, she didn't insult me, but I got a little mad. I was like, you know. It was almost like it came out like, you don't make the effort. And I go, you know, I'm in L.A. We all used to live in L.A., and now I've got two sisters in Hawaii. I got another sister in Colorado. I got family in Vegas.
Oh, I know.
So it's like, it's hard to see anybody. When we did the reality show, when I went out there to be on the show, you know, I got to see them a lot, and that was great. I was out there for like 2.5 months.
No,
me and Jenny would sneak cigarettes behind the house while we made that.
That was great.
It's like the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, right. Sometimes that's a good thing
but
for the family.
I don't want to turn this into a Yenta fest with you ladies.
Yeah, Eric asked if this was the intervention.
Oh, yeah. That's a good thing. Jenny, Brandy, and Mom told me you guys were planning an intervention with me. I don't want to do this in front of Sandra, obviously, because she's our guest. But if we do an intervention show.
What do you need to be intervened against or for?
I don't know. Jenny, would you like to answer that?
I don't know because I wasn't in on it. I think I just got grouped in. It's like, you know, once one of us decides to intervene on the other. This is like it's basically the same thing as birthday parties. Like once a year we'll pick somebody in the family to do an intervention for and be totally out of touch with everything and then project all of our crap onto. But
that's why it's
going to
be great radio.
Yeah,
that's
actually what
amazing.
We should.
So will you do it? Let me just ask you this before I move on. Will you promise you will do an intervention show on my show with me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
I think Sandra would be the perfect mediator, too.
Yes, that was my next question. Sandra, would you like to mediate?
Absolutely. Who's calmer and cooler than me?
That's me.
I'm surprised. Listen to me, though. You would think I'd be all ginned up and crazy. Everybody was, like, I'm sure, anticipating, you know, the over-the-top Sandy. But, you know, I'm very mellow, and it's nice when you can call in and just talk and be calm.
Well, let me ask you a question because I was watching some of your stand-up and I've seen you in interviews and stuff. Do you, you know, you have this ability where you sort of create a character to sort of make a statement. It doesn't, like you say, you don't always necessarily do jokes. Like I just watched you with your two adopted daughters on stage, which was one of the other funny
things.
That was my
makeup artist, Karen Kawahara's two little girls.
No, no, it was so hysterical. They're like, I'm bored, Mommy, and you were talking about how you bought them the nicest clothes. And I mean, it's hysterical to me.
That was funny, yeah. Well, it's a persona, you know. It's like, once again, it's going back to that whole, like, uber-sophisticated, you know, Vegas in the 60s kind of vibe. And that's, like, one of my stage personas. So it's kind of funny when you, like, now more than ever, when you do these interviews, it's like, you know, when I used to go on Letterman, I would go on in my, you know, persona, which sometimes freaked him out because he didn't totally get it. But now sometimes you just do these interviews and you've got to be, like, straight and talk. And it's like, you know, a little bit of the glamour is gone from the business kids.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But we're trying our best.
But do you watch wrestling?
Oh, but I'm a boxing fan.
All right.
I love
so you-
boxing.
Oh, okay. So some you boxing understand
heel.
The idea of playing a heel.
What's that?
The term heel and babyface in wrestling?
Yeah, a little bit, but not really.
It's just basically a persona. And sometimes you play, you know, a persona that's, you know, not necessarily your personality or something you're necessarily proud of, but you make
right,
a point.
Right. Yes,
but
yes.
I'm just
exactly.
getting to the point where I think you're brilliant at it, and I just wondered if that's just something you figured out along the way. I mean, back to your comedy talk, or happen naturally on stage?
When I first started performing, you know, in L.A. back in the 70s, I was, you know, really, really, I was 19 when I started performing. I was really scared. And so I just did this whole, like, I went into this persona because I didn't want to be completely myself. And it was just a good kind of shield, you know, and a place to, and I didn't want to do characters, but I didn't want to be totally myself. So, you know, it was kind of like somewhere in between. And so that was when I came up with my, you know, my fabulous, sophisticated lady, and that was always something that kind of carried me through.
Do you find people confuse you for that persona a little too much?
They have over the years, you know, but at this point, I wish they would just completely think that, because I don't, you know, the more real you try to be in this world, the worse it is. It's like, when I have to, like, try to explain something I did on stage, it's like, then I know I haven't accomplished my job. I don't want to explain it. It's like if it offended somebody or confused somebody or made somebody uncomfortable, I think that's part of being a performer.
I would agree, obviously.
You know?
you're a pro at that, Jake.
I am. See, I have some of the good traits of performer. I'm just not entertaining. That's the thing I've got to work on slowly over time. Let me ask you, Sandra.
You're just finding your niche. Your whole thing is, but I think you just have to process your emotions beforehand so that you can channel them in the direction you want them to go instead of getting frenzied, and you're getting better at it. And I get it now after I texted you and intervened via text message last week.
I didn't even mention our texting. I was keeping that private.
That's a loving sister. That's a sister.
Jenny's an awesome sister. Although I was just wiping my butt with the phone.
Unbelievable. I got to just say, I have to say that all you kids are really amazing, because I knew you when it kind of at the peak of your mom's success during the show.
And
that was not an easy time. There were a lot of different influences and people around that were very, it must have been very confusing for you guys. And I just think, in spite of all that, I mean, also your mother is wonderful and has all the great attributes, but sometimes she didn't even know what was going on, I think. And I just think to see you guys be so cogent and smart and in touch with your feelings is just very impressive. And I'm really happy for you, because it's a very hard business to grow up in.
Thank you. I think that's
and
nice.
I feel like this is not. I'm not just saying this. You know, you're not kids anymore. You're not 12 years old. I'm not just saying this like, oh, you did a beautiful job in your cello lesson. You really did. Like, you came through. You pulled through, and you took all your resources, and you've transformed them into something that's like, you know, the real reflection of the goodness of humanity. And I think that's. I mean, that says a lot for you, and it ultimately says a lot for your mom. Even in the middle of the Michigas and craziness, which I know was and is to a certain extent sometimes.
Yeah,
and,
it's true.
You know,
I think it's pretty miraculous sometimes, too. Our dad had a big part in that, and so did our extended family, too, I think. And also, you know, we were talking earlier about not coddling your kids as much, and Mom never did that with us. She was always pretty brutally honest sometimes.
Yeah.
So much, you're too much,
mm-hmm.
though. And
But
the thing is, I think, like, no matter what your parenting style or your beliefs are, I think the number one thing is, like, being able to be present for your kids. Even if you're an asshole when you're being present,
mm-hmm.
you're still being present.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's, like, I think that's the thing. Like, you know, I've always kind of studied people and wondered what it is that makes things the way they are and stuff. And that seems to be the common thread in everything for me, is just a sense of presence. And, you know, even if I'm present for my kids, telling them that, you know, they're not going to talk to me that way and go sit outside and get out of my house or whatever I'm doing. No matter how psycho I get, it's like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm still connected with them. And, you know, there's so many layers to parenting and having a kid. There's so many dimensions to it that even the parent and kid themselves can't touch or see. You know, it's just infinite. And, you know, I think the only thing you can do is have that sense of presence and, you know, really acknowledge that your child is a human being and have that connection with them. And I think that's why your daughter is so cool. And I think that's why, you know, we turned out being able to function and not having that kind of Hilton thing going on with us.
I think
that's
you're a hot mess. I don't know what everyone's talking about function.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like,
no,
I'm a hot mess, but I'm pulling it off. And my kids are decent human beings, and I just got like I got a letter from Cosmo's like classmate at school just saying that your kid's really decent and humane, and everybody else sucks via our
Aww.
Child. And thank you for it was really
was it,
sweet.
Was it written in Cosmo's handwriting?
It was written in my own.
In crayon with like the E backwards. That'd be
so
awesome.
So funny. That is good.
All right. Well, Sandra, do you mind taking a call?
Sure.
Okay. Jenny, you can stay on, too. I hope this all, the board doesn't blow up. We have so many people on. But there's a Twitter follower, I think she follows you, too, named Bella Blue Eyes, who I just love dearly. Are you there, Bella?
I'm here. Thank you for taking the call.
Of course. Did you have a question? Go ahead.
Hi. No, I just wanted to tell Sandra, I absolutely love you, and I so respect what you do for women's rights and standing up for women and children in this country. I just want to tell you thank you so much for that. It means a lot. I don't think you know how far-reaching you go.
Are you talking to me or Sandra?
That's really it's really nice to hear. Thank you for that. And, you know, I think we try to do things, and like Jenny and we're just discussing, for our own kids, and I think it has a more global effect when you're, you know, in the public eye. And I've always tried to keep things, you know, very low-key in terms of my personal life. I've never exploited my personal life. And a lot of people didn't even know that I had a kid, because when I was pregnant and I was performing, I never once said, oh, by the way, I'm pregnant. So it was this sort of funny thing that I did. It was almost like an experiment. And because of that, I've been able to, like, you know, keep it very real with my kid, you know, because she knows it's not like some sort of a she's not a prop, and she's not like, you know, a publicity stunt. So, and I think that does. I think it affects people, and they see, wow, somebody like, you know, like us is in, you know, the public eye, but they're still doing the right thing by their kid, and it's really important now more than ever.
I agree.
It is one of the hardest.
Don't you?
I have six boys, yeah, so it's very hard, and we don't have the computers, we don't have the cell phones, we don't have the video games. They're just banned. They're not allowed. So my kids really grow up having to go outside and find stuff to do. It's very different. It's very different.
That,
and I wouldn't have it any other way.
I love it, and I strongly recommend it for all kids. If you don't give it to them to begin with, they will find another way to engage and entertain themselves. I really believe that. This whole concept of getting into a van and having a video screen pop down so that your kids can like be like, you know, engaged constantly in something, you know, that creates a sense of, you know, distraction. We wonder why all these kids have ADD. Well, of course
God,
they have ADD.
Bless you.
All they do is watch the fucking video, and they play video games, and they're sitting at a restaurant. I saw some kid at a restaurant watching a video. When we were kids, you'd sit at go to a restaurant with your family, and you talk. Like with my daughter, we go to great restaurants. She loves food. She appreciates food. We go with friends, and she's engaged. She isn't sitting there on her phone talking. Even if she doesn't necessarily jump into the conversation, she's listening. She takes it in. She's exposed to great people and great experiences. Your kids don't need to be distracted. And if you're too lazy to talk to your kid and have a real conversation, then don't have kids to begin with. You weigh it all out, because not everybody needs to have a kid, okay? That's number one.
I agree.
There's enough kids in the world. If you're not committed to it, if you're not ready to take that long drive down that endless highway, don't do it.
It's a calling. I agree with that. There's so many people out there that it seems like the logical next step, which is kind of what that hobo tweet this morning was about. But I think a lot of people feel like, okay, I'm supposed to get married, then I'm supposed to have kids, and your clock's ticking or whatever. But, I mean, from the day I was born, I had every doll in the world. This was always, always my calling and my thing. And I think, like, if you don't feel that passionately about it, do not do it. Don't do it.
Amen.
No.
That's how everybody
dedicate your life to something else. And even if you feel like it's selfish, it's better to feel selfish than to have kids and screw them up, because that is truly
right.
Selfish. Don't involve a child in your, you know, indecision.
Eli, you can hit the applause on that one if you want. That was good. No, I mean,
keep
we only got a few minutes left, so I want to say thank you for your call. Jenny, you can stay on, because I know you always have good stuff. We've got about 7 minutes left, but, you know, that's such a great point. I just want to point out one last time and reiterate for you before we, of course, plug what you're doing soon, because we got to get to that. Of course,
yeah.
Wasn't I smart, Sandra, to save your plug to the end of the show so you'd be forced to talk the entire time?
Well, listen, you guys are Mishpacha, your family, and I would stay on if I had something to plug or not. That's always been my problem. Honestly, we could hang up at the end of the show, and you could have never said anything about my gig in L.A., and I wouldn't even care. That's my problem. I don't care enough.
Well, there's this weird thing. I mean, I love how I talk to you like a peer when I'm like...
You are.
No, I just, you know, there's this thing about promoting that I understand promoting. I think it's, you know, obviously it's important, but it's such this weird catch-22, because to promote yourself, you have to become the very thing that you don't like about people. And how do you do it? Because it is a necessary thing. And again, I don't know that people necessarily understand that when they are trying to get entertaining, that it is, promotion is so important. And there is a certain kind of personality that can self-promote. I see these people all the time. I think they're brilliant. But I hate those people, usually. They're usually, like,
well,
narcissists.
I mean, you look at somebody like Ashton Kutcher, who, like, took on that stupid pop, you know, chip thing. And,
right.
I mean, this guy never stops. I mean, there's certain people that are just, like, they might as well be whores, because they're just,
Ryan,
they are.
Ryan Seacrest is the biggest whore.
No, yeah, he's a perfect example of that. It's like, I mean, I love nice things. I love to travel. And I like having a certain amount of income, but I am not driven by it as an entertainer or a performer. I never have been. And as long as I have my independence and my freedom to say and do what I want to do and really have a true following and an audience, I'm going to be okay. I don't need, like, I don't need a lot. I just need, you know, quality.
Speaking of following, Jeffrey has been really insistent on making sure that I mentioned to Sandra, one of our screeners and friends. He said he fell in love with you after he saw you in Follow That Bird as a child, as a waitress.
Well, that was one of my greatest roles.
I love that. I have that, too. My kids like it, too.
It's a very cute movie. Very cute.
Jeffrey is the co-host of the Unscripted Radio.
Well, what he's on here right now, sorry.
But it's Unscripted Radio does a show Monday through Friday, Saturday show. And
he would
Jeffrey
love to have you on, too. He's a super fan.
Okay, well,
so.
we'll make that happen.
All right. You heard that, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Sandra, can I ask you one last question?
Of course, sweetie.
If you could give me any piece of advice as I try and make something of myself in this, what would you give me?
To be authentic. I think that, you know, I don't think you could probably be any other way. You've been exposed, you know, to people like your mother and to me and people that, you know, that you respect. And I think honesty and authenticity is really, for me, the key to all great performers and artists, you know. And if you have your voice, if you have your point of view, you can never go wrong and you can't fail.
Thank you. I hope you're right.
My advice?
Yeah, what's your advice, Jen?
Stop being a sniveling baby and stop being so angry and really
hey
and embrace. You know what? This is my favorite show that I've heard you do because you're being vulnerable and open, and at the same time you're having intelligent conversation that's not about antagonizing people, which I like when you do that too.
So it's the first show you've listened to.
No, I've listened to your other show. I stay quiet in my rage. I've learned my lesson to stay quiet in my rage when it comes to you. But what I'm saying is quit sniveling. Anyways.
All right, quit sniveling. So that's your advice.
Sandra, I will say one thing. I will be at the Red Cat in Los Angeles. I open on May 30th, and right now it runs through June 3rd, but I think it will be extended through June 10th.
I hope so, because I'm going to be in L.A. then. I want to come see you.
The tickets are fairly priced, and I can see here you do a show Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah.
And then
you get your money. Believe me, you get your money's worth, and I want you guys to come down. Is mom in L.A. or is she back in Hawaii?
She's in L.A. right now.
She's changing. We never know how long it's going to last.
Well, if she's around and you feel like grabbing her and coming down, we can all hang after. We can go out for a nosh or something fun.
I would love that.
Because I want to see you guys, and that's one thing. I love coming to L.A. I love performing because, you know what, it is like a party afterwards. So you just see your friends and get to do what you want to do completely on your terms.
And the Red Cat is, what? It's the Ray and, what is it, Disney Center? Just for people
who
don't know.
It's downtown. It's like, you know, part of that Disney complex, that crazy, you know, mirrored building that's quite, you know, sophisticated and beautiful. And the Red Cat's kind of like the smaller venue downstairs, and it's a beautiful venue. It's super, super fun and hip, and, you know, it's kind of like where the art world meets, you know, performance art meets entertainers like me.
So you can go to redcat.org, and you can purchase tickets through the website. Your first show is Wednesday, 2 from now, on the 30th, yes?
That's right, honey. A week from Wednesday, we'll be out there giving up, you know, hair, makeup, Joliet Led, Manolo Blahnik, and other couturier.
I might have to stop by for a show.
I hope you do, honey. Yeah. I hope you do. Jake, please come. Jenny, did I hear you say you're going to be in L.A.?
I think I will be in L.A. for that week. So,
oh, sweetie, I better see your gorgeous ass, or I will go crazy on you.
Oh, thanks, Sandra and Jenny, for including me in your pilot project. I love it. We haven't gotten anywhere with it yet.
We're gonna regroup and we're gonna talk because I'm trying to get your mom on board to produce it. We should all just make it a family project and get it.
Well, you know, I run Full Moon High Tide Production. That is my day job. So
well, then
we definitely need to talk.
Let's talk when we're in L.A., okay?
No one knows, you know, women and female issues better than me.
Jenny, if you're there, let's get together and talk to him about it.
Let's get together and talk about him. Yeah, the intervention show. Sandra's going to be there on the intervention. She's the
They're going to call it a pilot show, but it's the intervention.
Yeah, whatever you guys got to do. You know what? You could tell me it's an intervention. I'll be there. I'm not afraid of it.
Well, there's nothing to be afraid of.
I have no idea, but sure.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to put one together now just for fun.
No, we're going to do it on air. We are going to do it on air. I already talked to Mom Brandy last night. Probably in 2 weeks. So I still have to be electrocuted. And
That's my job.
Yeah. And then I still need to do the intervention. So we got a lot of stuff to do. But anyway, I want to thank Sandra Bernhardt. We are wrapping up.
Thank you, Jake.
What a pleasure. What a
great show. Smart,
thank
fun.
You.
I love you, Jen. I love you,
thank
Jake.
You,
I love
Sandra.
You guys.
I love you.
And, thank you so much. And Jenny, we'll talk later.
Thank you, everybody. That was apparently my best show because my sister finally listened to something I said.
Thank you.
Shut up, Jen. All right, I love everybody. Kisses and hugs. As Ringo Starr says, what is it? Peace and love. All right, thanks, everybody.